You're listening to The God Journey, a place where people thinking outside the box of organized religion can share thoughts and conversation along the journey. Here are your hosts and fellow travelers, Wayne Jacobson and Brad Cummings.
I'm Brad Cummings.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And welcome to another podcast of The God Journey. This happened about New Year's, huh?
This will be on New Year's weekend, so Happy New Year's, everybody.
Happy New Year's. Wayne, you got any resolutions?
I won't say never. New Year's resolutions are not my thing, I got to tell you. There are certain times, seasons in my life where I feel like God wants to restructure things and wants me to make some fresh choices about things. Rarely does that coincide with January 1. It has on a couple of occasions, but mostly it'll happen two or three times during a year. I feel like there's that really time to pause, reflect, kind of think where I'm going from here. And I got to tell you, I don't think it's going to be January 1 this year.
Usually everybody's stuffed because of the holidays, so one of the resolutions is to get exercise more, get out there, lose a few pounds.
Well, are you making any? Is that kind of where you're headed?
No, not really. I tend to make them when the Lord kind of, you know, encourages me to make them. I don't know that New Year's resolutions are a big deal. I do know that a lot of people, they do. It's a time in which they sort of reflect, take stock, and so, you know, I'm not against them. you know, it's like, well, God bless you in those resolutions. I just know that I tend to get excited about the things that God makes priorities in me, because those are the ones I know he'll give me grace to follow out, as opposed to just here's my list of all the things I want to do.
Well, let me ask you, how many New Year's resolutions you think get made every year that don't get fulfilled and maybe aren't even continuing into February?
Perhaps the bulk?
Maybe 90% plus. I heard an interesting statistic last year, and I thought, now this is fascinating, because they were saying, and I forget the exact figure, but I think they were saying the whole weight loss, health club, working out industry in America is a $40 billion industry, if I remember that stat right. And they said, you know, during this time of year, that industry takes in the vast bulk of its income because people pay for a year and then use it for a month. So they don't stay with it. And they said, this was the comment the announcer made. I thought, this is fabulous. This is a $40 billion industry that is guaranteed to fail 92.8% of the time.
Wow.
Now, think about that. If 92, and I don't know if that's the statistic for all New Year's resolutions, but, you know, New Year's resolutions, in my sense, for the most part, if they're not godly inspired and something God's working you through, it's just your choices for self-improvement. It's not going to work. We don't have the power to change ourselves over time. At least 92.8% of us don't. And I thought, how can an industry exist that's guaranteed to fail 92.8% of the time? What car would you buy, computer would you buy, that fails 92.8%?
You just wouldn't.
No. So why does it work? And I think it works for the same reason religion works. The reason the weight industry or weight loss industry can work, even though it fails 92.8% of the time, is because when it doesn't work for you, you only have yourself to blame. I didn't follow through. I didn't work. I wasn't committed enough. I couldn't stick to the diet. I couldn't. It's a perfect industry. You sell people something that depends on their performance. When they fail, they don't blame the club down the street. They don't blame the diet. It's me. I didn't stay on it. And I think that's exactly the way religion works. I meet so many people frustrated because they go to church, quote unquote, if they use that expression, or they're really committed and they're trying and they're doing all these things. They don't see their lives changing. And instead of giving up on religion, that maybe religion doesn't work, I mean, that would be the great thing to conclude, but it actually all turns inward. It's a self-blame, self-condemnation. I'm not committed enough. I'm not devoted enough. And that just doesn't bear the fruit of the kingdom.
Well, weight loss probably doesn't work like guilt loss if it's just a fad moment thing. I mean, the real change is come from a healthy lifestyle of not abstaining from something, but it's embracing lifestyle choices that you do day in, day out.
I still think Christian transformation, the way Jesus talked about it, comes because we conform our lives to his standards or find out the rules and follow them devotedly, but my growing relationship with him and my growing affection for him and my growing trust in him He displaces the things in which sin takes its hold on my life. So I don't even think, as I live this journey out now, I don't look to say, okay, I'm going to change this now, or I'm going to fix this part of my life. I'm still saying, Jesus, I want to so much grow in love with you and grow in this relationship with you that you displace those things that make me captive to self or sin or those other things in my life.
The show that we're going to kind of focus on for this week is the whole issue of God and mammon and the fact that you cannot serve two masters.
Wow.
And, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, money issues and it, you know, gets right to the core of what's going on. I mean, you watch how, you know, people's spending habits, or you go through their whole, you know, checkbook or their pocketbook, and you can pretty much demonstrate the things that they have a sense of ownership to and the things that are the priorities and all that other stuff.
You can almost feel the condemnation rising, can't you?
Well, it's so weird. Why should that one subject be such a sore point, quote, in religion, the whole money issue?
It is, though, isn't it?
Yeah, why do you think that is?
Oh, because I think the whole idea of people getting fleeced out of their money to support. I mean, I think that whole deal is there's a whole lot of focus on money, begging money, and then particularly some of the folks that do it more in the media these days, and they're flying around the world to their 16 mansions and their, you know, Gulfstream 5 jets. And so I think there's a lot of good reason why there's a certain amount of angst when money comes up in religious settings or in even Christian settings. But the truth is, Jesus talked more about our money and use of it than he really talked about anything else.
Yeah, and I think the reality is that this is one of those areas where, man, if I ever needed some truth and understanding, insight for how to experience and to live in the kingdom
and mercy.
And to live free.
And mercy. Lots of mercy.
And mercy. Man, I want to get God's heart on my whole finances. One, I want to know who my source is and who my provider is, and I want to know what I really do trust in. I think one of the most exciting things about this whole journey outside the confines of the institution is I had no idea what I really did trust in. I trusted in the provision of a regular paycheck because I was following, you know, the call of God on my life and I was being provided for by the church structure and system. When all of a sudden that whole thing crumbled, I realized, wow, what do I really trust in? Who is my source and provider? And what do I really think about all this? Those were questions I kind of took for granted.
And that was true for both of us, because you could tell everybody all along, yeah, God's my provider, and he provides everything that we have. And yet really it was vested in that particular system of offerings and paychecks and salaries and board disbursements. And it was really tied to that. And when that was gone, totally gone. For me, I don't know how quickly you were cut off the dole. For me, we got resigned early December of a year, and we got our December 15th check. Maybe we got this 31st check too, and that was it. And no severance, nothing. And so we're sitting down, Sarah and I, with two kids headed for college, near college age, going, oh my goodness, Father, how do we survive this? But at that point, it became clear to me, Jesus had not been my source of finances from the beginning.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of people, I mean, these tend to be unexamined areas of our life. I think one of the reasons money is such a sore point is it does cut so close to where my heart is. It does reveal so much of what I really do believe. And I think a lot
of us... And what I value.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are kind of frightened of having this area laid wide open and fully examined. And, you know, I think the thing that I so value is that's what our sort of little being jettisoned out of the institution did for us is it gave me the no choice anointing of having to examine some of these areas of our life. And, you know, I remember one of the first things as I was, you know, pursuing, quote, the call of God on my life. I remember God said it's not so much what you do or who you are, but who you serve that matters most. And that was one of the first things he said to me. And that was a little bit of a struggle. I was trying to like, well, how do I apply that? What does that really mean? And then the next segment, what he gave is he brought the whole issue about my trusting him in the realm of finance. And he said, Brad, you can't serve me unless you trust me. I did not trust him to be my provider. I didn't trust that if I would just, quote, follow him, that somehow all the bills would get paid. Because I'm just going, like, at the end of the day, it's like, God, I know you love me, but are you going to pay my bills?
Particularly when you got those Thessalonian scripture about if you don't work, you don't eat. The Puritan work ethic among Christians, and even people who haven't been employed in so-called the system, as we've talked about here, people who are engineers or teachers or doctors or salespeople. I mean, most people go to their jobs to earn a living, to pay for their home and food and clothes and whatever. And even though we'll say, you know, God was the provider of the job, I think people who are listening to this who haven't come the same place we've come from are still saying, yeah, I'm not sure how we sort this out either. I'm not sure that my job isn't my source. And yeah, is the answer, should we all just quit tomorrow and see if Jesus takes care of us?
I don't think that is okay. Everyone hope, you know, get a pink slip and it's from the Lord. I think the reality is these are areas of our life that we've really got to invite God and say, Lord, I do want to understand, are you Lord over this arena of my life? I mean, I think that whole God and mammon scriptures where you cannot serve two masters, either you will hate the one and love the other, it's acknowledging these are two powerful deciding factors in our life. Either you're going to make your decisions based upon God is directing me and this is my sincere belief that this is what he said, or I'm going to look. Now, but let me ask a question. What is mammon? I mean, that's a nice little biblical phrase, but what is it?
It's a King Jimmy word.
It's a King Jimmy word.
Most of the translations just say money. I think it's a pretty good translation for it.
I looked a little bit into it, and it's like the best guess was mammon comes from a root that the same word trust comes from, and it's something in which we trust. And it almost always has some.
Well, it says that right in our money, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It says in God we trust.
In God we trust. I think that was a brilliant idea from somebody trying to say, hey, at least as you focus your life on this thing, let's try to put a reminder. It really is God that I need to trust in this realm. But I think
it's kind of denying the very reality that's going on. I mean, we have a lot of things like in our culture. In God we trust, but yeah, I got to tell you, most people trust the money and the bank account.
And I think it's interesting. It's like, do I trust God when my bank account is full and there's more there? And I go, oh, yeah, man, I've really been blessed. Do I have that same level of confidence and trust when the bank balance is a lot slimmer or, you know, approaching zero? When my bank account is full, I'm not really asking an active question of whether I am trusting in God. And I think that's the thing that begins to – I realize for a lot of us – our financial provision, our resources, our material wealth, when they're there, we trust in them. I have a false sense of security. If you ask everyone that suffered through Katrina or some sort of natural disaster, 6 hours before the thing hit, they felt fine, unless they knew that it was coming. The reality is you can, in one moment, have all of those things that gave me the illusion of being secure. They can be gone in a moment. What then do you trust in? And, you know, I know that this is an arena of my life that I just had to sit there and say, God, I want to find freedom from a false illusion of trusting in something other than you. And the only way that was really brought to focus was when, quote, the proverbial rug got pulled out from underneath us. And it's like, well, what do I trust in, and how do I make these decisions?
You make a good point with the Katrina thing. When something is wiped out that you didn't have any control over, that's a different deal than my bank account's at zero or I'm overdrawn to my credit cards because I'm spending stuff for hobbies and recreation. It's not just survival. And particularly in America, when you talk about American economic culture, even the poorest among us are surviving quite well. I mean, even in
some of the richest of the world.
I mean, we are by far. And so when you talk about need in our culture, it's incredibly relative terms and a skewed reality at that. But if people are low on bank accounts or going through a tough time, if they lose a job, that's one thing. If it's just my spending's out of whack, or, you know, I've got a gambling habit I'm hiding. And so, I mean, I'm wasting the money. And so the fact that if I don't have any because I'm wasting it, then how do I trust God? If I'm being irresponsible in my own stewardship of it, then at what level do I reengage a sense of trust in how God provides for me?
Yeah, I think all of this comes down to some basic, just sort of how do you go about making some simple decisions. Is God involved in the decision-making affairs of your life? Are you asking him, Lord, you know, is this all right if I do that? I sort of feel like the whole idea of eating from the tree of life versus eating from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. I think a lot of times we think we know because we have a grasp of scripture and a sense of the principles of godly living, that a lot of times I'm sort of just applying wisdom that I know from scriptures and I'm making the decisions and God's not a part of them. I think when all of a sudden when the rug got pulled out from underneath us and I didn't know where our provision was coming, I recognized, man, I was making a lot of decisions that God was simply given kind of a lip service of being a part of. And now because of the sheer dependence factor of going like, my gosh, Lord, where are you? I was inviting him into a whole lot more of our life and all the decisions therein.
Because it's just not the procurement side. Yeah. It is also the spending side. If you're going to really serve God and live in relationship and trust with him instead of do economically what I need to survive, that mammon thing can be as much, you know, greed and grabbing for good things. That mammon thing is also serving my own sense of Puritan work ethic, responsibility, you know, stewardship of finances. It's having my eye on God and living in him, or having my eye on my finances and living to it. And that's a whole decision-making structure on both sides of those two things that offers two very, very different realities. Because it's not just God's my trust to get money. If that's true, then God has to be the voice that also informs how I spend it and where it goes and what my priorities are in it. And if I'm not inviting him in there, the same thing happened for Sarah and I. We realized now we've not had a regular paycheck for, gosh, 12 years. I mean, what we live off whatever God provides, the various crazy things that God asked me to do and as other people kind of participate with us in that at times. But it certainly makes you look at what you spend very differently. Is this a God thing or not a God thing? And can I just live to whatever lifestyle I want to and then just trust that God will provide the means of living that I want to live to? Paul was so, I think, superb about this, talking about learning contentment in abundance or in great need, that contentment was the issue. It wasn't, do I have a lot? Do I have all that I want? Do I have all that? It really was, is am I content with what God's given? And even says, with food and clothes, therewith be content. Well, I can't imagine too many of us in the developed West would be thrilled with just food and clothing.
Yeah, I think the way we define need versus want is very different on a global scale than it is in our little American context.
So living by trust in God, not mammon, invites him into that whole arena of our lives. It's not just, I want to trust God to be my provider. It's also, I want to live in God about the way I live and every dime that we have. Not, that's why I think tithing is such a cheap reality. If I'll give God 10%, then I can do whatever I want with the other 90. Instead of, no, everything I have belongs to him. And how do I do that? And I don't serve this ascetic God. You know, I get a golf round in now and then, and Sarah and I do some things that are fun. So I'm not saying, you know, Sarah and I eat, you know, lentils and, you know, wear rags around that. I'm not into that. I think there is a sense of God's provision and the freedom to live the way he provides for us to live. At the same time, that's very different than necessarily the standard I'd want to live by, or even watching other people around me and how much money they make doing what they're doing and feeling that pull of, oh, I wish I had more. I mean, I think that's very much a pandemic in our culture. We don't look at the poorest among us and, gosh, grateful for what we have. I think our tendency most times is look at people that have way more than us. And sometimes that justifies what I have, so I don't have all that much because I know people have a lot more. On the other hand, it incites the greed to say, ooh, man, I'd like to have a better car, a newer computer, you know, whatever. I think those things are challenging too.
My basic premise or my passion behind even just this topic is if a lot more followers of Christ really did allow their lives to be examined in this arena of you know, if they came to a much more reasoned, understood dynamic of how does God work with my finances? You know, how do I define my sort of responsibility? What is he calling me to do? Man, I think our lives would bear that out in such an appealing, attractive way to the world. I think it's because so oftentimes this is such a jumbled mess.
Yeah.
And there are divided loyalties and issues of worship and stuff like that, and the whole self-serving. That I think it's the whole realm of finances that warps so much of how we walk out supposedly what we believe. I think the world is looking at this and saying, I see some glaring contradictions here. I feel like somebody's after some of my resources, or someone's trying to use God to get at them. And it's like, I think some of those things are very real and very true.
Yep. And to look at it for ourselves and say, gosh, my own life may be a contradiction there, and not be the examination I think you're talking about is not one of, let's look at your spending bottom line, see what you're doing, and then fix it so it looks better for Jesus. I think you're saying, no, this is a prayerful exam. This is taking my money into my prayer life. And as I'm with God communicating about, you know, I'm going to the store, you know, what do I buy here? What do I don't buy? It's having this sense of communion with him that invites him into the finances and even realizes when some of it's out of whack. We live in an extravagant society. My goodness, I look at some of the stuff I have, and I'm going, I'm sure that can't be right. I don't know how it's wrong yet, but yet be able to have that examined life without bringing all the guilt and performance issues into it. Just saying, okay, God, would you teach me how to live financially as you want me to live?
There's an excitement in my heart that just says, you know what, because of what God has done in the last 4 or 5 years and the journey that we've been on, he's brought a dynamic of freedom. I mean, I know, I finally realize he is my provider. And he isn't some penny pincher. I mean, he's allowed us to enjoy and experience some wonderful things.
Yeah, we hear about all your vacations all over the
world.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm serving a pretty good Jesus. But the reality
is... Boy, that sounded like the success deity there. Are you going to fix that a little bit?
No. You can check my bank account. It's not all that amazingly successful. The reality is because there's a dependence and I feel like God has brought me to a place of confidence in him as opposed to an insecure fearing about what I can do. I mean, I'm an industrious guy. I have...
He is. Let me tell you, he is an industrious guy.
I'm an industrious guy.
We had him working over here yesterday for us, as a matter of fact, and ran me ragged.
And while I was even sick. but no, I mean, I have a strong work ethic, but the reality is I recognize it. If my security is based upon my industriousness or my ability to find work or my just passion to be at hard work, I don't really think I'm ever going to feel secure. I mean, when is it that, quote, you have enough laid up so that it can't be wiped out in a single day? I think there's a parable about that guy trying to take all his riches and build a bigger barn. And,
absolutely.
And it's like trying to find his security there. And it's like you don't know that that's not going to all be gone in a moment. The reality is I didn't know where my security and my trust came from, but in the process of being stripped of our resources and having our life exposed in a way that says, wow, I didn't know. I trusted in the provision of that paycheck from my employer. I didn't realize, Lord, you're inviting me to a whole different way to live this life. You're inviting me on an adventure that isn't irresponsible, it isn't crazy, it is responsive to your voice, and I can rest, even when I can't do all the math, I can rest in knowing that if I'm doing what you asked me to do, I can walk in the full confidence that you will care for me. You know, the whole parable where it says, look at the grass. Look at the birds. Do we see them out begging? It's like, you know, whoso arrayed the fields of and the flowers? And you're just going like, Lord, is that who you really are? And I think it's been in a willingness to walk in a place of dependence and saying, all right, God, I'm going to understand what it really is that you're my source, that I'm not looking for other people. I'm not hinting for, quote, love offerings. I'm not trying to ask someone else to be my provider. But it's like, Lord, I want a life that I can have the confidence. You are my provider. I finally know that. That's what I think is being offered to us as an attractive, excited, you know, reality that God does want us to live secure. He does want us to know where that really comes from. And it isn't in mammon. It isn't in the presupposed possessions and the things that I can accumulate. It really is found in Him.
And so it really is thinking through a different decision-making structure about those things. I think the God and mammon scripture, and you can't serve both. Okay, I want to be a God guy, and then but I'm really going to do my best I can do over here for the money into my life too. I think he's really just saying there's a conflict of interest between doing what God asks every day and living as a submitted son or daughter of His, and living to the bottom line of your own life. There's a inherent disconnect between those two things. You can't live with a foot in both kingdoms, I think is pretty clear. It'd be easier if money weren't evil. It'd be easier if he was talking about money as something that's sinful, because we all need money. Jesus used it to pay the temple tax or buy food, or I mean, it wasn't that money is an evil, we all should avoid it, but that you can't orbit your decision making structure around your financial self interest. You can't. But the world's teaching us to, whether it's insurances and bank accounts. And on the other side of that is people, I mean, we've all known on the abuse of this, people on the other side just live trusting God, who spent themselves to ruin and lived begging off their friends to survive. So you've got that, which
or again, also are living in presumption.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, well, God, you know, just by faith. I've watched.
But they'll use the same language we're using. They'll use
I
the same
know,
language of trust and provision, and that's why it gets confusing to people.
That's why it was such a challenge to go like, but Lord, I can't. Be a flake, and I mean, I recognize some of the judgments I made on other people that genuinely were, you know, trying to embrace what God had asked them to do, and then others that were just presuming and would end up always being at the end of the handout line.
Yeah, I was going through a real low spot about some of that, gosh, probably 8-9 years ago now, in terms of financial provision. I could not sit down with Sarah and I and say, this is going to work 6 months from now, just wandering around doing things that God asked me to do. And we were at a very low ebb income-wise during that season. And I grew up on a farm. I'm the you don't work, you don't eat. I had that drilled in me from the time I was a little kid. And, that's a lot of hard work. You don't get up every day and say, Jesus, do you want me to disc the vineyard today? If the vineyard needs to be disced or pruned, you better do it or you're not going to have it. So I grew up with that real strong work ethic and relearning to live by every word that God provides and live in just the obedience to what He's asking me to do was very, very challenging to me. And this is going to probably less apply to a lot of our listeners as to a few of us who've made money by ministry or by gifting. Not even just clergy. Because in some ways now, my income is somehow serviced by things that I do in ministry. If I'm speaking somewhere and people give me gifts to have been there or help pay for the plane flight or whatever. So I'm not saying that now. I mean, it doesn't come in the same way. I'm not giving a salary by an institution that's collecting offerings. But in other words, I do what God asks and God resources it. And sometimes it's out of my giftings as a brother in the body and not just as a secular person doing some job for somebody. I was real low ebb for this, and I was staying in a home with actually a Catholic brother who had room in his home, and I was actually spending time with a different group of folk. And I got up that morning, and I hadn't shared anything about the financial struggle. He says, you know, this is really weird. Besides, I was reading this book this morning, I just felt like giving you a copy of one of the chapters in it. And I don't know if it means anything to you or not. And it was from Watchman Nee's book. I think it was a normal either Christian life or church life. I don't remember which now. It was about the man of God and making money. And as I read it, going to my next location, I thought, this is everything I've ever been afraid of. What he said was, if God asks a man to live and give his life away for the kingdom, and that God will resource him financially and not having to do other things for that, he said a couple of things there. That person should never get a specific salary. He should live by what God provides. And the second thing he says, that man should never ask for money, because the asking of it proves that he's not trusting Jesus to provide it. And I just go, this is everything I was afraid was true at one level. At another level, I mean, that's the mammon level. I would hate for that to be true. On the God level, for me to be able to go do what I do and never ask for money and never think about it and never have to get it from people in some way, it's been a tremendous freedom and blessing. But that's a challenge.
I hope you're not uncomfortable with this, but you do things a little differently. I mean, I've watched a lot of folks in ministry, but, you know, do you charge an honorarium for where you go to speak?
No, I don't.
Do you have contracts that people have to sign?
Not for the ministry things, the bridge builder things that I do. I mean, there's other things that I do where there are specific honorariums and money. Here's more secular. Is it more secular? Am I less in ministry at a bridge builder event than I? These are the things I've not sorted out yet.
The reality is, I don't think so. But in the whole dynamic of what's been attractive to me is you're willing to go wherever it basically you discern God is saying, I want you to go there. And you're willing to go there regardless of whether, you know, someone's going to pay for the flight or guarantee that all the expenses are taken care of. You're willing to just go because that's where you know God's asked you to go. And you've gone there courageously going like, you know what, I trust that God's going to take care of me. That doesn't mean that he's going to take care of you on that trip or by those people or through some means. But it's been a challenge to me that I've wanted to embrace myself. It's like I'm going to do what God's asked me to do, and there's not always a direct one-to-one correlation that I get paid by any of those things that I'm doing.
Right.
Money, God will provide, and I'm not sure where the source is going to come from.
Right.
But I've watched guys that go out, you know, on the, unquote, the itinerant ministry speaking track where it's like, they have speaking fees already agreed upon. They have contracts that you got to sign ahead of time and fax and
flight,
you
know, and living arrangements.
Yeah, and you got to pay fuel costs for the airplane. And I'm just going like, I struggled. I just went, man, Lord, talk about the business of religion. And is it all wrong? Is it all evil? You know what? That's for God and them to sort out. But I just know that
it's not the way he's asked me to live.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And it isn't the way I know that he's asking me to live because, gosh, that is so warpable. If my decision-making function is decided upon at the end of the day, well, what does the bank account say? That's my God, as opposed to the God that I'm presupposing I'm following, who is saying, I want you to do this.
And living this way, you know, people say, well, this could just be presumption and you're out there. You know, if it's just presumption, you're going to find out pretty quick.
Yeah.
I think that's the wonderful thing about what Watchman Nee, and the point from Watchman Nee was, if you're not ready to trust God to provide for you, God's not ready to entrust you with his people. And I thought, now that's an amazing statement. If because you will exploit that, that's the whole Ezekiel 34 that we read a podcast or so ago about exploiting sheep, because you've got to somehow make enough to pay for the program and pay for your living and pay for whatever else you want to do, that you end up exploiting people from the best of intentions, but you still exploit them. But I'd say to this, I didn't get here the way I live now because I was bright enough to figure this out theologically. I was stubborn enough to say to God, I'm not going to beg money from anybody. When people ask me at times, can you use something to help with the podcast or help with whatever? I'm very honest about, yeah, we could use some help with this or that or the other thing. But I don't generally go to a place and say, okay, now, you know, my plane flare was X amount of dollars getting here. Now, that started because I was stubborn enough to say, God, if you want me to do this, you're going to have to pay for it because I'd rather have a real job. That's how God and I fought this out in the early stages. And then I went someplace, gosh, this was 9 or 10 years ago. I went to someplace where I spent a significant amount of money to get there. The plane ticket was fairly expensive. And I got there and I spent a weekend with a group of pretty burned out people. And we just talked through the God journey Friday, Saturday, Sunday, through a home all weekend. Time I left Monday morning to fly back. Usually people, you know, just have a sense of we want to help provide for him to be, particularly if I'm in the States. Not one person gave anything. And I flew back home and I was just going, okay, God, am I being presumptuous now? Was this not your trip? You know, are these people just cheap? I mean, all the things that go through your mind. I got home. A day or two later, I got a check in the mail from some guy in Texas. I don't know him. I never met him. As far as I know, he's not on any of my mailing lists, but he must be on the website or somewhere. He had my address anyway. And it was just a little note. He said, I woke up this morning. God told me you needed $1,000. And so hope you can use it. And there was a check for $1,000 in there. And I don't know the guy. It's not happened since. The guy doesn't support me monthly. But that's what won me. It's moments like that where you go back and say, okay, that was I knew it was a God event. I knew I needed to be there that weekend. I knew it was just not needed. I knew it was something God wanted for that group of people and me. And then to watch him provide, it's those things that have led me to say, when people ask, how much does it cost to get you here? I say, it doesn't cost anything. It really just, let's pray. Let's ask God if he wants it. If he wants it, God will resource it. However.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard just, you know, said over and over where God guides, God provides. And it's like, you know what? It comes off some mouths so tritely, and yet it's something that I have come to fully embrace is the reality is, you know what? If God is asking me to do this, God will provide for me, but it may not be through that thing.
Right.
And that's been the biggest challenge is I
exactly.
think, you know, so much of, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but so many of the ways that decisions are made by people in ministry, at the end of the day, they're not asking from a true heart check, did God ask us to do this? They are asking at times from a bank book dynamic, can I afford to do this?
Right.
And God had to, you know, I think through the no choice anointing, bring me into stark clarity on some of those issues of just going like, okay, so how do I order my life? How do I function? What do I trust in? And I mean, he put a restraint on me. He says, Brad, I don't want you to work for anybody. And the idea of he didn't want me hooking up to another employer.
Now, this is not for everybody.
This is just what you sense.
And what do you mean when God told you so? Your voice in the middle of the night. This is another show, I think, sometimes.
Sure.
People really have this question.
The reality is it was a clear thing that was in my head that was just over and over. I just knew it's like somehow God was bringing, you know, one of the very first things he did say to me. I think I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, Brad, you can't serve me unless you trust me. And it's as if God was bringing me full circle back to that issue. Now that you're in a new circumstance, guess what? I don't want you looking for security in anybody or anything else, not even in your own industriousness. Hmm. I want it centered in me. And I mean, that's terrifying with a brand new mortgage and three children and a wife, and you're just going like, and I got no income, and I don't want to be a flake, and I am a hard worker. What do I do? I just sat there and went, all right, God, you know what? I need to learn this. I need to understand this. And it's like we've walked down this road far enough. Might as well find out if bankruptcy's at the end or not.
Oh, boy, sir, and I had that conversation.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we're down this far. Might as well go. And I just determined I'm not going to be asking other people or hinting to other people, oh, you know, here's what my needs are. But the reality is God initially – provided through just concerned others. I made no requests, but they did provide. But then I went, you know what? I don't want to try to just get my income from some other religious means. I went, God, you know what? What do you want me to do? And so I started a landscape and construction business. It was what seemed available to me. And that's where I, you know, and that's where our provision has come from. It has been it's a kooky way to run a business, but if I thought that was my once and for all and that was a career I was supposed to build, I would have approached it a whole different way. But I knew it was just a season of time. And we've now come to a new season where I felt like God said, you know what, Brad, I want you to kind of lay that down. So I haven't been seeking other things, but just going like, yeah, but God, where do I go? What do I do? And it's been so neat to just realize I've got a father that is providing for me. And there are moments where there's just a sense of, you know, you ask a question, how do you know that that's God? The reality is I think the honesty of your own soul, is that me, is that making up? I don't know that you ever fully answer that other than you apply it to the reality of what's happening in front of you. If God didn't ask me to do this, it's kind of like the sink or swim reality. I will probably sink. You know, Peter, you know, Lord, if that's you, bid me to come to you. And he jumps out of the boat. If that was of Peter's own making, all you'd hear is a big sploosh, you know.
Yep.
But because it was Jesus, there is the miraculous ability to actually walk on the reality of what God has said, and it works. And it's like there's times that, you know, I realize I may be wrong. I have to look at my wife. I may be wrong. I may have totally messed this up. But it is my sincere belief that this is what God is asking or requiring of us in this moment. And the great news is that, you know what, to date, he has taken care of us.
For Sarah and I, it has really been, I think what you just described is so key. We've got to live by every word that God provides. We're not looking for principles of financial management and stewardship here. because I like what, you know, it's very seasonal. God may ask you to do one thing now. This months that I haven't had a lot of other things to do, and there's been opportunity to do some manual labor that provided income. And I felt like God saying, that's what I want you to do. And I felt part of that really wasn't so much about my income as it was people God wanted me to spend some time with. And by doing those things, I was with them. So it gives God a whole different latitude about what he assigned you to. But, and I will come back to this. I mean, there's a whole show right here, because I know it's very threatening for people who have learned that Christianity is all about principles and ethics. So you learn the right rules and follow them, to hear, well, man can only live by every word that God provides, that his word to us needs to be as fresh as the food we eat every day. And there's a dailiness to God's provision for us in terms of his leading and direction. But if you haven't learned that, I get a lot of email about, how do I hear from God? And I hear you guys talking about God saying this or God saying that. There's a whole show there. There's probably multiple shows the road. I'd also like to, and we haven't had time on this one, we're kind of at the end of it, but I think there's a whole nother show on exploring this generosity of God and how do we, as privileged people who live in societies, I mean, they'd say out of 100 people in the world, only one own a computer. So you realize the people that we're talking to here, unless people are passing out CDs, we're one of the upper 1% of the world's financial powers. And I really want to talk about how do we live alongside a world. I was in South Africa this summer, and we spent a little bit of time with a seven-month-old girl, same age as my granddaughter at the time. This girl has AIDS and will probably not live long. She had a huge abscess on the side of her neck that the doctors wouldn't deal with the national health care because she had AIDS. She was going to die anyway. So we took her to a private doctor for $15, could get this abscess removed and get some antibiotics for her. How do we live in the societies we live in with all that we have in the face of that kind of need in the world? And how do we connect with that need? And that's a whole nother show. I hope we take some time maybe up the road to explore that, because without the whole guilt, babies are dying over there, you know, give money. But how do we live alongside, when we're talking only 1% of the world's population, the upper 1% economically, how do we live alongside a world in need, and how would God ask us to experiencing? And I think the real important thing we've talked about, experiencing God as a generous God, is because until you experience him that way, you won't live that way. You won't live generously. Yeah. If you live with a miserly God that just doles out his little shekels when you really need it, then that's how you'll live alongside the need in our culture, when people really need it, if they've really earned it. So I think that's a whole nother piece that I'd like to explore someday.
Yeah, I mean, I think if there is something that I'm wanting to see made crystal clear, is the fact that principles alone are not enough to live the life that God's inviting us.
Absolutely
onto.
Not.
I mean, the life that he says, you know, I have come that you might have life and have it abundantly, that's only going to be found in an intimate friendship with him. That does involve the hearing and responding to God's active, you know, voice to you. And I think the biggest thing that I've recognized is that's something I've come to cherish, not as some elitist skill that I have, but that's the birthright of every single one of us. I mean, there's no way I can live this life apart from direction that does come from him that is unique to the journey that I'm on. I can't take the things that God has said to me and just wholesale apply them to everybody else.
Or take what God has said to others and apply that to me.
That's where a lot of the guilt, the manipulation, the condemnation that gets just wholesale passed around. That's, you know, it's like, well, I'm living by faith, brother. You know, what are you trusting in? It's like, that doesn't mean that God, that there's something wrong for someone to be, you know, working for this employer. God put a restraint on me and me alone because he needed to bring a truth to bear in my life that I couldn't see any other way. If I had just run to some other source to try to hook up to them, I would have never found the freedom and the joy and the confidence that I'm currently experiencing and realizing, wow, God, you're finally making this issue clear in my life. I can trust you. You can and you will provide for me, but it looks like this, you know, sometimes, and it looks like opportunity for work in other ways. I mean, you called the other day and said, hey, you know, I'd like to hire you for a day. Well, the reality is like, you know what? That seemed good. It seemed right. It's like, okay. But I didn't have the desperate need, like, oh, thank God someone finally is hiring me. It's more like, you know what? Okay, that seems right.
Yeah, and we appreciate your help. We got some tiling done in the kitchen yesterday that
fantastic.
Sarah and I would not have been able to get through ourselves and still have a marriage probably. So I was glad you were here. Oh, well, this has been good. I hope we get a chance, because this learning to live in God's voice and will and the sense of direction that He gives us every day, that's not just about money. That's how you love your wife, how you love your neighbor, how you live in the world. How God wants to use you to touch somebody's life you might be passing by in a store or a mall. So this is a big issue. I think we'll come back here and explore this because I think we've had people in our past who've helped us learn to listen, and other people are saying, gosh, can you help us learn too? And I think we couldn't do anything better on this podcast than help people have a sense of how God leads them and how He directs them through every day in their life.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we've provided all the answers at all. I think I want to pose some of the valuable questions of going like, you know what? Don't let this arena of your life be unexamined. And it's not from a sense of, oh, you know, how do you measure up? It's more like, there is a freedom and a joy and a confidence that I think God wants to take center stage.
Yeah, it's inviting God into your wallet, into your purse. It's making this life in Him something more than my quiet time and meetings I go to with Christians, however I do that. It is really, how do I live in God all day long? And my money and my pocketbook's a part of that.
And a security that comes as a byproduct of recognizing, you know what, if He is Lord of this arena, then He's going to take care of me in the fullness of who He is, not just what I can figure out.
Absolutely. Well, we gave you a short one last time. It's a long one this time. And we're also getting some wonderful emails and comments on the blog. So hopefully those of you that are wanting to broaden the discussion, check back with the blog now and then, especially on your favorite shows, and see what some of the other folks are saying. We had some wonderful email. We didn't really have time to process it this go around. And we really, to try and read it all to you would have been a 5-hour show. So thanks for writing. Keep writing, because a lot of what we're hearing and saying are things that come up in future shows. And if you put some of those emails on the blog so that other people can enjoy them too, then we won't have to read them on the air. So all you have to do is go to the blog, hit the little comment button, and then, you know, post your thoughts.
Thanks for traveling with us today on The God Journey. If you'd like to join the conversation, we'd appreciate your questions or feedback by email or at our blog at thegodjourney.com. Or you can call 24 hours a day to our comment line at 805-626-4212.